The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Hey, it's hour one of the Eric Metaxas Show. Ladies and gentlemen, there are 2 hours every weekday. And by weekday, I mean Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Today's Friday, weekend coming up. In fact, the weekend's here. Who's to say it's not here? Okay.
Wow.
A couple of big announcements. Number one, tomorrow, which is Saturday, I will be in Plymouth, Massachusetts. I'm speaking at a big event. Now, you can drive there if you're, you know, within driving distance. Can I say that? So I'm excited about this. Go to my website, ericmetaxas.com. You can pull it up. And if anybody can drive there, this is tomorrow night, so Saturday night. But then also I'm preaching in a church there on Sunday morning. Maybe you can get to that. But I just love the fact that I'm going to be in Plymouth, Massachusetts. I never speak in the Northeast. I'm excited.
Yeah, I want to ask you something, because I've never been to Plymouth, Massachusetts. Yeah. Do they still have a big, giant rock there? I mean, is it there? Is
can I tell you? Plaque, I don't know. I'm sure that there's a Plymouth rock, so the answer would be yes, I'm sure of it.
All right. I wonder how big that thing is. Is it like Gibraltar, or is it
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'll see it. I'm supposed to get a tour.
Well, please do.
A tour. Suzanne and I are going up.
Take a picture next to it, please.
So, Plymouth, Mass. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be in Edmonton, Washington. Ooh. I'm getting around. I'm going to be in Florida. I'm going to be like I'm traveling like crazy. But tomorrow, Plymouth. Okay.
Yes.
Today, Alvin, we got to mention this. We're airing two interviews today that we did last week when we were in Tampa with the Turning Point USA gang. Charlie Kirk and his Turning Point USA folks did a student action summit. Now, I just want to say that the cool thing about going to these places is you bump into people that you wouldn't ordinarily bump into. Mm-hmm. Two of them are on today's program. So our first guest is Jack Posobiec. All I know is he's my first guest, but I follow him on Twitter. There are very few people that are worth following. He's one. And he's my guest in a couple of minutes. In hour two, we're playing my full hour-long conversation with James Lindsay, who has done something. I don't know how to put this, folks. James Lindsay claims to be some kind of atheist or agnostic or whatever, but he lives in the world of the academy, the university. And he saw the kind of crazy critical race theory before we were talking about critical race theory, all what they call critical theory. It's really highfalutin lunacy. And he thought he would make fun of it. And he and some friends wrote a number of high-level academic papers, basically blowing smoke with this stuff, and got them published.
Wow.
Hilarious.
Well,
so
that's great.
So he's an hour two. Yeah. You don't want to miss this. And they both got James has a book out. Okay. But
yes.
Before we get to our guests, I have to say this. I get emails. I don't know if you experience this, but whenever I'm dealing with social media, it's a weird thing. It's like there's this level of laziness. Like people will contact me, like a comment on Facebook or something. Like I don't have time to look at all this stuff. And they will ask me a question that they could have looked up quickly as it took to email me the author of the book and tell me about it. On page 256, what did you mean by this? You know, or whatever. But the classic one was yesterday somebody emailed me. And they said, you know, Eric, I saw you on Steve Bannon's War Room and really enjoyed it. But hey, Eric, why don't you try to get your books on mystore.com, Mike Lindell's store? Because I don't like to buy stuff from Amazon. I don't like to buy stuff from Barnes & Noble or whatever. And I'd love an alternative source. So why don't you see if it's possible for you to get your books on mystore.com?
Imagine that.
And I thought, hey, dude, my books are all on mystore.com. I mention it all the time. And you could have gone to mystore mystore.com. Click, boom, there are the books. But he was more interested in writing me a long email asking me if I could do that. So I thought, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
All of my books, except for the one that's coming up, are available, or almost all my books are available at mystore.com. So I want to say to my audience, please go to mystore.com. Now, if you want to buy it someplace else, you can find it cheaper. Fantastic. But I'm just letting you know that if you use the code ERIC, it redounds to the bottom line of this radio program. We do need financial help. Yeah. You know that we were not. Did I mention we were knocked off YouTube?
Wait a minute.
This tie is too tight. I can't breathe.
Okay.
But anyway, so go to mystore.com. Most of my books are available there. If you want to buy them someplace else, buy them someplace else by all means. Now, if you pre-order Is Atheism Dead?
Mm-hmm.
It does help if you pre-order it from a place that reports to the New York Times, because it's important for a book, if it's kind of like a major type book like Is Atheism Dead, it's possible it could get on the New York Times bestseller list, which helps sales. It is an apologetics book. It's an evangelistic book. I want as many Americans, as many people in the world as possible to read it, because I'm a Christian and I think that it's very important that we know what information is out there that we probably didn't know about leading to belief in God. Like, there's tremendous – I mean, it's so overwhelming that I have to stop myself from raving.
Can I mention that if you order it ahead of time, it redounds to sales – ahead. Now, I just looked up on the dictionary here, redounds,
yeah.
And I think I used it correctly, the word redounds.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I used it correctly. But the point is that we want everybody – because remember I keep saying that Parable Books has effectively said, because they got some woke emails from some stores that don't like me, that they're not going to promote Is Atheism Dead at all. This is Parable Books, which I just find scandalous. It's upsetting. But I want to say – we need your help. Over the years we've been on the air, I've tried not to be I've tried not to ask for help in this way, but I think sometimes you have to do it. I want to let people know what we're dealing with in our Marxist cancel culture. And, you know, if people want to demonize me, that's their issue. But I'm going to let you know that Parable Books has done this. If they reverse course, I will talk about that all day long, too, because I don't want them to get. You know, it's just strange to me that they've done this. But so please do pre-order Is Atheism Dead? It helps a lot. This week.
Yes.
If you're not signed up for our emails, ericmetaxas.com, sign up for the emails. If you have a problem, if it doesn't take your email, just email us. We'll do it for you, because some people say that there's some weird issue. But I want to say, the only way we can reach many people at this point is with our email list, with these, okay? We will send you all of our videos. This week, we talked to Naomi Wolf again. We talked to Steve Bannon. Huge, folks. We talked to Jim Ryan. Jim Ryan is literally the greatest high school athlete ever in any sport. I mean, he's been voted that. He's such a big deal. We spoke to him this week. He's a profound man of Christian faith. He was a congressman from Kansas. He's just a hero. But he was the world record holder in the mile. He set the high school record in the mile. I mean, I think his record in the mile stood for 14 years.
Yeah. And what's great, he was in the Olympics in Tokyo in 1964. And, of course, he talked about what was going on today.
And now we're in the Olympics in Tokyo.
Yeah.
And we have a fake president. All good.
Ooh.
All good stuff.
Yeah.
So we just want to tell you that if you want to get these videos, they're on Rumble. You can subscribe on Rumble as well. But there's all kinds of stuff that we send you via the website. When you go to the newsletter.
And
so
Michael,
you go to the newsletter.
Michael Knowles as well. He's got that great book, Speechless. He was on Monday. Big
yes.
week this week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just want everybody to know that. And don't forget Nutramedics.com.
Oh,
if you use the code ERIC there, you get 20% off. And I got to tell you, I take this stuff all the time.
Me too. Yeah.
They Relax Medics and Melatonin help me sleep for days at a time sometimes. So Nutramedics.com. For all your pharmaceutical needs. no, what do they call it? Nutraceutical needs. I think that's it, Alvin.
I think that's it.
But folks, please go to EricMetaxas.com. Please sign up for the newsletter. Tell your friends. I'm not going to stop talking about it. It's important. It's one way that we can reach you. All right, we'll be right back with our two amazing guests.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people. In fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day, to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Folks, this is Eric Metaxas on the Eric Metaxas Show. I can't remember the last time that has happened to me, but I'm interviewing someone right now whose last name almost no one can pronounce. I thought maybe he can pronounce it for us. Jack, tell my audience how to pronounce your last name.
Yeah, so here in the U.S., so I got one of those Polish last names, right? So Posobiec is what we go by
Posobiec.
In the U.S. Yeah.
That's so easy.
Another longer, much more complicated Slavic true pronunciation, but here in the Anglosphere where we all reside, I just go with Posobiec to keep it easy on people.
I've been following you on Twitter, and on Twitter it makes no difference how you pronounce a name.
It does not.
So Jack Posobiec. Jack Posobiec, tell my audience, because I just love to do this with people, like to introduce them to my audience. So, you know, you're a little complicated. I want to make sure that my audience understands who you are, where you're coming from. So, like, where did you grow up?
Sure. So originally, grow up in the Philadelphia area, so just outside Philly, Valley Forge, if people know that spot. Actually got married in Valley Forge, so a place that's very close to my heart. Went to Temple University, ended up, and then as you do, after college, I moved to China for 2 years, spent 2 years living, working there, learning the language, learning to speak Mandarin.
Wait a minute. What did you say?
After college, I moved to China. Why
did you move to China? Now, I know you got into military intelligence and all kinds of stuff, but why did you move to China, Jack? You grew up in the Philly area.
Yep.
A lot of people who grew up in the Philly area don't end up moving to China.
No.
So can you explain that?
Yeah, so for me, geopolitics and international politics had always been a focus of mine, and that was what I studied when I was in school. And even though this was back during really the height of the Iraq War, the War on Terror,
right,
I just kept seeing every issue. And suddenly it seemed to me that China was tied to so many different things that were going on. And I even back then,
it's a pretty big country, isn't
it? This is 15 years ago. And saying that, you know, I think obviously this War on Terror stuff is big now. But honestly, I think that China maybe in the future could actually be a bigger issue for the United States.
That was pretty prescient of you.
And
I
so
pronounced
I said,
the
let's
word
go.
Prescient, prescient.
It is prescient.
That was
it's
extremely prescient of you, Jack Posobiec. And so what did you do in China? Now, this is one thing to say, you know what? I'm no longer going to live in the Philly area. I'm going to go to China. What do you do in China? How did you make this work financially?
So originally it started as I was doing my last semester abroad. It was a study abroad program. And I ended up getting an internship with the Shanghai American Chamber of Commerce right there. And so I was working with U.S. companies to be able to...
The Shanghai American Chamber of Commerce.
That's right. So the American Chamber of Commerce in Shanghai.
Right.
So we're helping U.S. companies to be able to get into China, to be able to sell, you know, Hershey's chocolate or Disney movies, whatever it is, to be able to get into the Chinese market.
Right.
And then eventually another consulting firm that was kind of doing the same type of business said, hey, what are you doing when you graduate? And I said, I don't know, maybe travel a little bit. And they said, well, do you want a job? So I said, sure. So I was doing international business consulting in Shanghai for about 2 years.
So how did you get into military intelligence?
So I was given a choice at one point in about 2008, and it was, you know, do you want to stay here and do you want to continue on this path of very lucrative path, you know, to be working in that trade, international trade between the U.S. and China.
You want to sell your soul.
And there's not a lot of people that can do that and speak the languages.
Right.
Or do you want to go? And in my head, I was thinking, I just don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. And I thought, you know, I learned so much about China. I learned about the party system. I know the language. I wonder if, and I've always wanted to join the military and do something for my country. And so I thought, why don't I move back to the United States and join the military? So that's what I did.
So you joined the military. How long did you serve?
About 8.5 years.
And if somebody says to you today, who are you today? How do you describe yourself and what
do? Today I say I'm a former intelligence officer with a focus in China, and I now work as the senior editor for humanevents.com.
Okay, and for folks who don't know what that is, what is humanevents.com?
So Human Events is one of the oldest conservative magazines in the United States. It founded all the way back in 1944. It was revived in 2019. It was actually Ronald Reagan's favorite magazine.
Well, this brings us in the strange world in which we live to Antifa.
Yes.
You have been very involved in studying Antifa, getting up close. Is this a book or a film called The Antifa?
So, funny enough, I actually have both. So we did it backwards. So I did the documentary first, and then I did the book. So I did the movie, then the book.
Okay.
And really, I was working on a documentary about all of my interactions with Antifa going back to 2016 and then really culminating in 2020 in the Chaz, that occupied zone out there in Seattle. So much footage that I was able to get going undercover, really kind of dressing as one of them.
That's
kind of
gutsy,
spending
young
time
man.
In there.
That's kind of gutsy. How do you fool them into thinking you're one of them? Do you stop working out for 6 months? Like, what do you do?
Well, I will admit that we actually, myself and the team that went with me, we didn't take showers for about a week before we went in.
Nice.
And we also, when Chaz got started, we were watching videos of it, and it actually constructed a tactical layout of the entire area, but also got videos of how the people talk, how they act, how they dress. Coronavirus, the pandemic, and the mask-wearing culture, so that really actually helped us. So walking around being masked up throughout the day when you aren't even in a black block, that actually worked in our favor.
So and what is the black block? What
so
is
the
that?
Black block is...
The black block.
Yeah, and so for a guy who's a, you know, coming from a Polish family who spent time in China, you know, you got to learn about communism, and when it comes to your shores, you can look at it very closely. And so the black block is a communist tactic that originated actually in West Germany, believe
it
or not.
Wait a minute. I've never heard this. The black bloc is a communist tactic. So just to be clear, the documentary and the book by Jack Posobiec is called The Antifa, Stories from Inside the Black Bloc. So tell us about the black bloc.
So the black bloc is when you see Antifa operating on the streets, when they're out there committing what they call direct action, which almost always ends in violence against persons, violence against property. They are all dressed in black with an attempt to be indistinguishable from one another, and they operate in this sort of mass movement. And what that is called is a black bloc.
Right.
And this is something that actually originated in with squatters, the squatter community in West Germany.
The fabled squatter community.
Right. They would try to get them out. They came up with this tactic. Then that basically migrated to the United States. They started using it. If you look at the Occupy movement, you would see the
black
box.
I've never heard this.
There.
It's fascinating. Yeah. This is why I do a radio program, so I can learn from my guests. I've never heard any of this before.
Yeah, so
the
that
black block is hard to pronounce, but the concept of it, it's really, look, let's be honest, it's nefarious, it's dark. I don't just mean because it's called black block. There's just something about it It's subversive.
Well, it's an intimidation tactic. It is psychological warfare.
Right.
To dress in black and say, we are a force, we are masked, we are covered. You never know when we are coming. This is an intimidation
tactic. We can smell you coming. Yes. You just want to be upwind of Antifa. That's the key, folks. You want to be upwind of Antifa, unless you love weed and BO and patchouli and curry. But the issue for me is that these are young people that are obviously, now, you know, I'm not trying to be funny. Many of them are deranged. They're raging against mommy and daddy. There's something deeply wrong. They don't even know why they're doing what they're doing.
We actually dig into this in the book quite a bit. And there's a chapter in there called True Believers. And what I do is I'm actually building on the work of Eric Hoffer, who was kind of a longshoreman, working man's philosopher back in the 1950s. And he laid it out quite well. He said, when you have these groups, and it's typically upper middle class to upper class, or the new poor, if you will, that have been coming up in these adolescents that don't have a meaningful rite of passage, going from adolescence
into excellent.
That's,
I've never heard that, but that's exactly
that they,
correct.
They have a kind of hollowed out core, and they are looking for something to throw themselves into to attain that rite
right
of passage.
And everybody needs that sense of meaning and purpose. That's how God created
and
us.
And the true working class, by the way, they don't have this problem because they're working, right?
Yeah, but see, this is the point. Like, I got to put food on the table. I got to raise my kids. I got to keep a job. That is the war that you're in on a day-to-day basis. If you're not in that war because you're being subsidized by mommy and daddy or something like that, you are just raging. You're looking. I think in a 10th grade sociology class, I remember it was called reality testing. The idea that you want to find your boundaries, and if there are no boundaries, you freak out because you want to know, I need something to push against.
Right.
But if people say, no, you're free, do whatever you feel, there's nothing to push against. And so you kind of internalize this
and go insane.
And
you create a surreal experience so that you yourself can feel that you're fighting phantoms. And that's why when you go to these meetings and when I've infiltrated and talked to these people, they are constantly telling us that we're fight. What are you doing? Well, we're fighting the KKK and Russian.
Oh yes,
Russian.
Oh yes, in my head, I'm fighting them right now. I want to spell your name for people. We're going to be right back talking to Jack Posobiec. It's Posobiec. We'll be right back. Folks, it's the Eric Dax Show. I continue my conversation with Jack Posobiec. That's how he pronounces it, and he should know. Jack Posobiec, look, you've been involved in Navy intelligence. You specialize in the Communist Chinese Party, and you've taken all of this. Now you're the senior editor of Human Events, but you've taken all this to infiltrate and investigate Antifa. And we're talking about some things that are so important for people really to understand. Who are these crazy young people? And they are crazy. And I say this because I want to be clear that they're unhinged, but it's heartbreaking to me because, as you just said, they're longing for meaning, and in their minds, in their broken minds, they're fighting against injustice and all these kinds of things. But what's strange to me is that they do seem to have this vague organization. Who is behind Antifa? What is fueling this? Is it being funded by George Soros? And why would he fund something as inchoate and strange as this? What is your sense of where it comes from?
So it's actually quite interesting. And if you look at the Time magazine article that came out after the election, you can actually see discussions of being on the phone. These are senior members of the Democrat Party that were on the phone with many of these main organizers in these cities. Now, each individual Antifa cell doesn't have like a direct connection to some higher headquarters, but there's usually one or two members.
There's not like a hotline to Satan's throne,
no,
for example.
No.
You have to work your way up in the system.
But usually there's one
you
or two.
You can't get that out of the gate.
That are funded, have professionalized it to the point where they are themselves using this as a means of employment, and they've basically been taken under the wing of the higher ups. And so Antifa, as we talked about before, in their mind, they're fighting against society and they're going to overthrow the world and take over the system. But in reality, they've actually been co-opted. Antifa has been co-opted by the very system that they thought they were fighting against. What do I mean by this? When you look at the forces of Wall Street, Silicon Valley, Washington, D.C., Antifa, which says that they themselves are pushing for an anarcho-communist revolution, they are actually serving the interests of Washington, D.C., Wall Street, and Silicon Valley, and this new power structure that is seeking total control.
So they are the ultimate tools of the man.
They are the shock troops. They are the thugs in the streets. They are the ones that are conducting the intimidation tactics that if you're a conservative, if you're a Republican leader, if you're a Christian leader, if you're outspoken, these are the people who will show up at your house. They're the people that will threaten your children. They will go after you if you don't vote the right way.
If you give them a sandwich and some hot coffee, will they just go away?
Unfortunately, no. They won't take it from you.
You know, it's so fascinating to me, seriously, that the real issue here, let's be honest, forget about these deranged, sad young people raging against, the God behind the clouds. What we're really talking about, the real issue, is the leaders in these various communities, the mayors and the governors, who don't stand up to them and
Correct.
Don't push back. There's really nothing else to talk about. It's like complaining that, you know, the neighbor's kid is doing bad stuff. And it's like, well, the neighbor's kid is not responsible. What about the neighbor's kid's parents?
Right.
Why are they allowing this? So we're living in a country right now where there will always be deranged young people. But if there's nobody to tell them no, if there's nobody to tell them that's not going to go here, that's where we are. We have a lot of Republicans and almost all Democrats who seem unwilling to confront this on the most basic level of law enforcement. What is going on there?
Because, again, all of these mayors, these Democrat leaders, and increasingly members of the Republican establishment, they are terrified of being called racist. They are terrified of using, and Antifa employs various forms of information warfare.
Being terrified of being called racist? Like, just think about this for a minute.
You have to understand, it's information warfare. They're using that label.
It's so fascinating. It is extraordinary, and I realize that, you know, if you are worried so much about what other people think, I just feel like we're coming in our culture to a point where you can either be worried about what God thinks or not. And if you're not worried about what God thinks, you take your cues from whoever's screaming at you, and you respond. This is really nothing new, though. I mean, it goes all the way back to 1968 when you had, the students, like these thugs who come from upper-class homes, taking over the president's office at Columbia University.
Right.
And the president of the university just said, okay, like, we have nothing to say. You're young people. Like, you have, you know, you've got a pipeline, direct pipeline to utopia and to
you
heaven.
You have the right to flourish.
And we don't know, we don't know anything because we're old and we've lost our innocence. So please teach us by taking over, you know, our offices. That spirit that came in 1968 has been with us ever since. And we are now seeing the fruit of it everywhere.
Right. And so with that co-opting of it, as it's spilled over into many of these, and they call it, you know, woke corporations, woke Inc., critical race theory, all these different isms that are being pushed, again, Antifa is increasingly used as the enforcement mechanism, right? They will come. And what I also say is a great threat of Antifa is the tactics they use, unpersoning, deplatforming, doxing.
What does that word mean? I think when you have to make up new words, I know you're nuts and you're trouble. Why would somebody say, did you call it unpersoning?
Unpersoning, I
That's
did.
Like one of the ugliest words I've ever heard. Can you tell us what unpersoning means?
So unpersoning, it's actually something that was originally perfected by the Stasi in East Germany. And they realized at one point that they were locking up too many dissidents and it became too much trouble to go after everybody. So they said, well, instead of locking you up, they would just ruin you. They would ruin your reputation. They would use information warfare. They would destroy you. They would make you unhireable. They would make you unacceptable to have any kind of access into
you know what?
Society.
Forgive me. We're going to a hard break. We'll be right back with Jack Posobiec. Don't go away. Folks, I'm talking to Jack Posobiec. He has written a book called The Antifa, Stories from Inside the Black Bloc. You were just talking, Jack, about this creepy word, to unperson someone, which is really to cancel them, to destroy them so that they become persona non grata in the culture. It is precisely what the left accused McCarthy of trying to do to them by putting them on the blacklist in Hollywood. The left today is now doing the precise same thing to conservatives, but you're saying that it originates with the communist Stasi in East Germany.
This was one of the first areas where they realized that it was actually much cheaper and a lot easier to just ruin somebody, to cancel them, right?
But you're not really... in other words, what you're really saying, I think, just so I'm clear, is that it's not the issue of do we lock them up or do we cancel them. The issue is, if I lock you up, that's one thing. But if I ruin you, there's shame and there are social ramifications.
And social pressure.
So that is what they started to... That's why it's so psychological warfare. In other words, it's one thing to lock somebody up, but to... Because a lot of people can endure that. But when you... cancel somebody when you humiliate them.
In many cases, to their followers, that become they become a martyr.
They become a hero,
a cause celeb. They become a hero, right? It has the opposite effect, and they realize that over the years that it's actually more effective to use popular forms of mass media to unperson someone, cancel somebody, to ruin them and attack them.
Okay, but the key, in other words, this only works if the people in the culture go along with it.
In other words,
what I've said many times on this radio program is somebody decides to cancel someone, every human being needs to rally to that person's defense, and it doesn't even matter why they were canceled. You don't even need to agree with them. But that tactic is so odious and anti-American and anti-liberty that you must stand against it. But we're really living in a culture where people don't do that. They kind of go, I mean, most people just kind of go along with it. And they go, oh, so-and-so has been blacklisted. So-and-so has been canceled. So we can't have them on a program, or we can't talk about them. In other words, for some reason, people, even in the free West and even in America, the greatest country that ever existed, we are susceptible to these tactics. It's one thing to say, I'm susceptible to tactics because I live in a communist country and I don't want to lose my job and I don't want to... But the idea that this is happening in the free West, this is utterly voluntary. We're allowing this to happen.
So this goes back to Marcuse and the idea of when he redefines the word tolerance to mean repressive tolerance.
And Marcuse was the Frankfurt School philosopher and skunk who came to L.A. from Germany. But he was the one that really brought Marxism into the culture and cultural Marxism and Gramsci
because
and all these folks.
What he did was he changed it. The definition of tolerance used to be that I believe mine, you believe yours, but I tolerate your right to believe that. Well, what Marcuse did was to say tolerance means that we must destroy the intolerance. My tolerance, meaning the progressive leftism and communism eventually, is the only true tolerance, and that to be truly tolerant means you must eradicate that which stands against
it. This is why everybody needs like a re-education. I hate to use that word. I hate the fact that word's been destroyed, so I have to be careful. But we have to teach civics again so that people understand what is freedom, what does it mean to tolerate dissent, What are the parameters of tolerance? Because let's say somebody says, hey, we're all free, right?
Right.
You know and I know, but just simply because we're not idiots, that everything has limits.
Right.
So if my freedom says that I can drive my car down the street with stereos blasting music that with curses in it and whatever, somebody would say, excuse me, in this municipality, you can't do that. In other words, we have freedom of speech, but we have limits.
Yes.
You can do that in your house, but you can't do it going down the street. There's always limits. And what happens, it seems to me, when you're talking about tolerance, when you're talking about freedom, these basically good ideas, unless you define it and help people understand that it has limits, it quickly becomes absurd. And so that's why when you're talking about Marcuse and the word tolerance, he's kind of playing on that ignorance, that people don't even know what it means.
This is part of information warfare. It's linguistic warfare where they'll go in and alter the framework of these words to take our founding principles and take our founding ideals, because they understand them even better than we do, and then use them against us, and to say, well, for you to be upset with us, that's intolerant, that's not freedom. If you try to ban us from teaching your children critical race theory, well, that's illiberal.
Yeah.
Because you're banned. I've actually heard people say that. That's banning, that's freedom, that's just freedom of speech.
I think to cut to the chase, we just want to tell my listeners, this stuff is satanic. It's so dark and so deeply cynical and nihilistic. In other words, they don't seem to believe in anything hopeful or true or beautiful. It's just about winning. It's just about power.
So it's will to power, and I've always kind of said that it's actually, you know, progressivism and really this postmodernism is atheist trying to outrun nihilism, because a nihilist needs something to do after all, right? Because they're here living, so they create these problems and then use
that's
themselves
right.
as the solutions.
That's very funny. They have to outrun. Say it again. They have to outrun.
So it's atheism. Atheists outrunning nihilism.
I love it. I love it. It's true, and it's all a tautology. That's
right.
That's the beauty of it, right? In other words, reality is just this beautiful thing, and it kind of. How do I put it? If you go in accordance with the reality that God has created, you can grow wealth. You can expand. You can do these wonderful things. But if you have this pinched view of reality,
it's
a pseudo reality, and you are only. It's kind of like you just there's a limited amount of oxygen in the room. There are no windows, and eventually you're going to die. And so you're really trying to kind of fill time. And not lose something
in the
middle of
it. Well, it also comes from having a completely materialistic view of the world. That if all you care about is the materialism, if all you care about is the material physical world, there is no truth, there is no beauty, there's no higher, there's no transcendence, then of course you're going to be completely wrapped up in these things.
It's just fascinating to get to the roots of this stuff, so it's just great to have you here. Before we're going to go to another break, how can people find you if they want to find you online?
Best place to find me, so all my writing is done at humanevents.com, and then, of course, Twitter, JACKPOSOBIC.
Pasobic. I'm Eric Metaxas. We're at Charlie Kirk's Turning Point Student Action Summit in some city. I think it's Tampa. We'll be back. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm in Tampa, and you're not. Let me just say that I'm talking to Jack Posobiec, P-O-S-O-B-I-E-C. Jack, you and I were at war on one issue. I tell people when they go to MyPillow.com they need to use the code ERIC. You have the nerve to suggest they use your code, which is an offensive thing to me. But you know what? Since it's my program, I'm going to insist that we don't talk about that. We're going to talk about more important things. We're going to talk about the fact that you, honestly, you've gotten inside this issue of what is happening. And there's so many people that turn on TV, they don't have time. So it's important we really understand what's happening. But since we just have a few minutes left, where do you see this going? Do you believe that we're going to have people willing to stand against this?
And here's what it is, right? And one thing I said, one of the more pernicious aspects of Antifa is that those tactics that we were just talking about, they are now being adopted by other members and other layers of the left. What do I mean by that? Look at Loudoun County, the school districts out there. You've seen the teachers' union,
yeah.
The school board using those types of tactics
yeah.
against the families.
Yeah.
But what's been amazing to me is that the families, they're saying no, they're fighting back, and that movement has now spread. I've talked to families in Virginia that are now fighting back and starting organizations. I've talked to families in Florida. My friend Ryan Gruduski just launched a whole new national organization to fight against this in
yeah.
the schools. And because there is something that they've gone too far, right? And then when you go for the
children. Well, that's
the
beauty
of it.
Only now
when you go
are people waking up. Only now are patriots and Christians and conservatives waking up and saying, if we don't do something now, it's over. But it really, you talk about tolerance, Americans are extremely tolerant. They will put up with tons of garbage
right.
before finally they say enough is enough, and now that's happening.
One thing I do try to remind people that, you know, you can read the Bible, you can read the gospel as much as you want. You will not find Jesus Christ instructing anyone that tolerance is a virtue. Jesus taught us to not be tolerant of sin. So you cannot be tolerant of sin, right? You can be tolerant of someone who has different preference, maybe different promo code, but you would not be tolerant of sin. That is not a Christian virtue. And that is what people need to remember, because tolerance is, we are told, the greatest virtue of the secular postmodernist age. But interestingly enough, it is actually not a Christian virtue.
Well, and this is, of course, why we need to teach these basics again, because we have a couple of generations, mine included, really, that does not understand these things. These things were really, I would say, most people had internalized the basics of these kinds of things. Maybe they couldn't mention, you know, Herbert Marcuse, or they couldn't, but they sort of had a sense of right and wrong
yes.
that was cultural. That has gone away slowly, and it's why folks like you and me, we have to help people to really understand what is going on. What does it mean when somebody says tolerance? Because everybody says, "Oh, it's good, it's good." And you and I know that. Well, if you don't even know what the word means, how can you say whether it's good?
Precisely.
You can't. And if you don't know what freedom is, if you think freedom is license, then you don't. Why are we even talking about liberty and freedom? So these things are really, really important. And I think that your average American hasn't needed to worry about this, but suddenly we need to worry about this. We need to understand what is happening.
They're going after the kids. They're going after the kids, and we are in a situation now where there's this sort of that, you know, that old phrase about the frog boiling in the pot. I believe that the heat is being turned up too fast right now, and I think those frogs,
they're starting to jump,
are starting to realize,
they're getting jumpy.
And some people that have been paying attention say, I think the water's getting hot. Guys, I think the water's getting... I said, oh, it's not getting hot. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Nah, guys, I think the water's starting to get hot. And now suddenly everybody's going, hey, this water's hot.
Yeah, well, the devil typically overplays his hand.
Every time.
I don't know if he is aware, but he loses in the end. That's the good news. Jack Posobiec, a wonderful privilege and honor and joy to get to know you, to introduce you to my audience. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Eric. Thank you so much.